What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today we are talking about muscle loss, muscle memory, and how little you can do and still maintain. And we'll talk about why I think those kind of come together nicely into a single podcast episode. I hope the audio is good. My editor, James, I appreciate you doing all the work on this. I am once again relegated to doing this outside. the best time to record a podcast is when my daughter is sleeping. However, my studio is directly adjacent to the nursery. And so every time I'm like, oh, it's time to record a podcast, I stand in my office and I think about my baby waking up and I think about being served divorce papers by my wife and I pack up my shit and I go outside. And so here we are. So we're going to talk about, again, how fast do we lose muscle if we don't train? It's called detraining. We'll talk about how quickly you regain it when you go back to training. And then we're going to talk about how little you can do and still maintain muscle. And I think that those three questions really work together. I don't think anybody's really so worried about a single one of those questions, right? It's more of this, the matrix between the three of them, because really what people are coming up against is they're injured or they go on a vacation or life is just crazy right now and you can't train at all or as much. And people are worried about how fast they're going to lose it, how fast they're going to gain it back. And okay, but what if I train a little bit, right? Or okay, but how little could I train and not lose muscle? And before we jump into, we're going to look at a whole bunch of studies. We're going to try and go through this relatively quickly. I'm going to try and go through each of these topics, go through some of the research we have, and then kind of triangulate how we piece that research together into some best practices. But before we go into that, I will start by saying there's a difference between, like, a lot of people will go on vacation and they will say, I look like I lost muscle, or I feel like I lost muscle, like I'm weaker. And I just want to say that neither of those things are actually losing muscle, or they might not be you actually losing muscle. Like, you could look like you lost muscle and feel like you lost muscle and have not lost muscle or not have lost muscle. And for a lot of, in a lot of cases, what happens is you go away on vacation, let's use a 2-week break or something like that, and you look what we would call flatter, right? Your muscles look flatter. They look less full. They don't look as defined. They don't look as big. And you think, okay, I lost muscle. But what's actually happening is you've lost muscle glycogen. So one of the adaptations that happens when you start exercising, let's say you don't lift weights and you start, one of the primary adaptations is that your muscles will store more glycogen, right? And so the reason they do that is because they're saying, well, if we're going to have to do this whole weightlifting thing again, if we store more glycogen, we'll be better off next time. And so one of the adaptations that your body makes is storing more glycogen in the muscle. And with every 1 gram of glycogen you store somewhere around 3 to 4 grams of water along with it. And so when you start lifting, you can see in the very short term, sometimes you gain weight, right, from inflammation and from stored glycogen and water in the muscle. And it actually makes you look more defined. This is also in a very similar way how creatine might make you look better, because it increases intracellular water or water inside the muscle cell, which makes your muscles look fuller. And so when you don't train, your body does the opposite. When you're not giving your body that stimulus of lifting weights, your body says, okay, I guess we don't need to store as much glycogen. And this is also, I guess, again, kind of what happens when you, let's say, go on a low-carb diet or a ketogenic diet. You lose muscle glycogen, you lose water, you might look less full. It's why you also lose a lot of weight in the beginning of going into a ketogenic or a low-carb diet. But a lot of people, when they don't train, actually the first thing that happens is you actually look smaller, but that doesn't mean you've lost muscle tissue. It might mean that you've lost muscle glycogen and water alongside it, which is real and totally affects the way you look, but that adaptation, you might lose it quickly, but you gain it back so quickly. So for a lot of people, they might look like they lost muscle, but in reality, what's happened is you've lost a little bit of glycogen, a little bit of water, you look flatter, you haven't actually lost muscle tissue, and that glycogen and water will come right back when you start training. The second thing is you will lose neurological adaptations more quickly than you lose actual muscle tissue. And what I mean by neurological adaptations, I mean strength and coordination, let's say. And so, for example, let's say you're a pro golfer and you can normally drive the ball 400 yards. You take 2 weeks off, you come back and your drive is only 380, 375, 380. Did you lose muscle? No, but you did lose a little bit of coordination, and that coordination, being able to have your technique be perfect, affects ultimately your output or your performance or your strength in some ways. Because lifting weights isn't necessarily as technical as, you know, the technique involved in driving a golf ball, but what we don't realize is a little bit of loss in coordination, a little bit of loss in our ability to kind of synchronize the movements to the squat pattern, an RDL pattern, even a pull down, or even something very simple like a curl or a tricep extension. Even losing a little bit of coordination, even it's on a subconscious level, you might not even feel like you have a little bit worse coordination. But even losing just a little bit of coordination will make your ability to actually move the weight go down a little bit, and you will be able to express a little bit less strength because you're a little bit less coordinated. And so those two things, you might feel like you lost muscle and you might feel weaker, but both of them together might not have anything to do with actually losing muscle tissue. And both of those adaptations, because they are lost quickly, they are gained quickly. And so, you know, like that golfer example, you might just need to get out there for 10, 15 minutes, do an extended warm-up, and all of a sudden you're kind of back into those, you have that coordination back and you're hitting the ball as far as you were previously. And I think that this covers most people's issues. Most people go away on a vacation, take a little break, and they lose muscle glycogen and they lose a little bit of neurological adaptations and they feel like the sky is falling and they lost a whole bunch of muscle. Now, moving into today's discussion, how fast do we actually lose muscle tissue if we don't train? And it depends on three things. It depends on how much you're doing. So even if you're not training, there's a difference between being on complete bed rest versus, hey, I'm not going to the gym, but I'm still getting out of bed and doing all my daily activities. I'm still, you know, going to work and walking around and playing with my kids and, you know, all of your normal daily activities. There is a difference. And when people are on complete bed rest, we do see muscle atrophy, loss of muscle, pretty darn quickly. It seems that just going about your normal day, moving your muscles at all, is enough of a stimulus to dramatically reduce the rate at which you lose muscle. But being on complete bed rest, not using your muscles at all, we see pretty significant muscle loss within a week. I say pretty significant, I don't mean, again, like the sky is falling, you're shriveled up into a raisin, but detectable, noticeable muscle loss within 1 week of bed rest, for sure. But a lot of these studies that we're going to talk about in a second factor in doing your daily activities. So people that are maybe not working out or taking a break from training, but are still instructed to go about their normal life. The second thing it depends on is calorie balance. Pretty simply, you'll lose more muscle if you don't train and you're in a calorie deficit, right? If you're at calorie maintenance, you're eating enough protein, or you're even in a slight surplus, those things will dramatically reduce the rate at which you lose muscle. So again, if you're not training, I wouldn't also be in a calorie deficit. And the last one is maybe training age. We don't have a ton of research on this, but untrained people and trained people might lose muscle at different rates. Maybe untrained people lose it quicker, but they might also gain it back quicker. And so it might end up being a bit of a moot point, or at the very least, a scenario where untrained people might lose it quicker but gain it back quicker, and trained people might lose it more slowly but, of course, gain it back a little bit more slowly. But I don't have a lot of data to decide whether or not that's 100% true. So when we talk about how fast we lose muscle, I was trying to find some really good papers on this, and it turns out the papers on detraining, so detraining is the specific word that you'll see used in the research. The detraining research, it's not like there's a study where it's like, hey, we took trained individuals and we stopped them training and we measured them every day until we could detect weight loss and that's it. Muscle loss and that's it. That's the study. A lot of these studies are what I would call on-off-on studies, where participants train for a certain period of time, then take off for a period of time, then go back to training for a period of time, and then another group does the same amount of weeks of training but does not take any time off. So you'll hear a lot of the studies we're going to go through. It's like, you know, group one trained for 5 weeks, then didn't train for 5 weeks, then trained for 5 weeks, and the other group trained for 15 straight weeks. And so, interestingly, this sort of a study outline is actually studying a couple of things at once. It is studying muscle loss, but it's also studying muscle regain, right? It's studying what I actually think ultimately matters, which is, does taking little breaks make a difference, right? You're not actually worried about how fast you lose muscle. You're not actually worried about how fast you gain it back. You're actually worried about, does this break that I'm going to take, either voluntarily or involuntarily, is it going to make a difference? That's really what you're ultimately asking. And at first, I was like, well, I wish there was a study just on only muscle loss, right? Only muscle loss. But actually, I'm quite glad that a lot of these studies factor in the retraining, the getting back into training, because I think it helps us answer a couple questions or at least one more powerful practical question. So we're going to go through five studies. We'll keep it pretty quick here. The first study is Dirks 2016, and this is the bed rest study. They took 10 healthy young participants in their mid-20s, normal BMI, and they were subjected to 1 week of strict bed rest, and they saw significant muscle loss in 1 week. And again, that's strict bed rest. So I do think that there's a big gap between bed rest and just going about your daily activities. And of course, there's probably a big difference between daily activities and actually working out, which we'll get to at the end. Next study, Huang 2017, 10 resistance trained men. They lifted for 4 weeks and then they stopped for two. And at the end of the 2 weeks, they maintained all their muscle. So this is an important study because we have resistance trained people and we have a complete cessation of training for 2 weeks. So they lifted for 4 weeks and they had been lifting. So it's not like they're coming into this untrained, but the intervention was 4 weeks of training and then no training for 2 weeks. And at the end of no training for 2 weeks, they had not lost any statistically significant amount of muscle. And so this is a really powerful study because that at least tells us, hey, you know, after 2 weeks of no training, if you've been training, chances are you haven't lost any muscle tissue. So that does kind of put down a marker of, hey, at least 2 weeks of no training probably doesn't really make a difference if you've continued to do your daily activities. And I would also say if you've maintained energy balance. Next, two studies are both by Ogasawara, one in 2011, one in 2013. Very similar studies. The first study in 2011 is 15 participants. And what they did was they trained for 6 weeks, then they took off for 3 weeks, and then they trained again for 6 weeks, right? So 15 weeks with a 3 week break in the middle. And the control group trained for 15 weeks continuously. So one group did six on, three off, then six on. Another group did 15 straight weeks. Now, I love these studies. This is why these are the papers that I just absolutely love. Both groups gained the same amount of muscle. Essentially, taking a 3 week break where you don't train at all did not make any difference. Just let that sink in for a sec. 6 weeks on, 3 weeks off, 6 weeks on versus 15 straight weeks, they gained the same amount of muscle. So that tells us, again, I'm not taking these, let's not take each of these studies as gospel, but let's just look at them in a bubble for a sec. What that says is that it says two things. One is you probably didn't lose much muscle in 3 weeks. And two, you gain it back incredibly quickly, which signifies something of what we'll call resensitization, meaning it's like if you've been drinking coffee for 6 weeks, taking 3 weeks off makes you more sensitive to the caffeine such that when you get back to drinking coffee, it has a more robust effect. This is highlighting something similar where a 3 week break, you might lose some muscle, but you also get more sensitive to the training stimulus such that on the back end, when you return to training, you gain muscle more quickly such that at the end of 15 weeks, it didn't make a difference if you took a 3 week break in the middle, which I find freaking incredible. I love those studies. And so I'm not, you know, it's funny enough, same people, Ogasawara did a very similar study in 2013. I think what they were trying to do here was extend the length of the study here. So this was the first study was 15 weeks. In 2013, they did the exact same study, but for 24 weeks. So they did three rounds of six on, three off, six on, three off, six on, three off versus 24 continuous weeks, right? So we're headed close to 6 months here and they saw no difference in muscle growth. No difference in muscle growth. And that is multiple rounds of taking 3 weeks off, completely off of training. Now, both of these studies are on untrained people. And so that is absolutely something to take into account. But even if you are looking at those studies pessimistically, even if you're not trying to be like, see, it doesn't matter at all, it's, you know, you'd have a hard time saying it matters more than just a tiny bit, meaning these little breaks, even if you want to throw it in the bucket of, well, that's untrained people, you know. It's the fact that they saw no difference is still crazy. It's still, you know, here you are, person listening to this, worrying about your, you know, long weekend where you can't train or your 1 week break off to Europe for the week or something like, and these people took 3 weeks off multiple times in a 6 month period and they saw no difference in muscle growth. So even if you want to throw that in the bucket of like, oh, it's untrained people and you want to be a little bit pessimistic, you want to kind of round down those results, it's still freaking incredible. Next study is from Hallinan in 2024. This was, yeah, I like this study a lot. I actually like their conclusion the most. I'm going to read you their conclusion verbatim. They had 50 participants, and they trained 10 weeks on, 10 weeks off, and then 10 weeks on. And the other group trained 20 weeks straight. So they had 10 weeks off and then 20 weeks straight to equate for the amount of time training. And the break in the middle, so the group doing 10 on, 10 off, 10 on, saw the same amount of muscle as the group training 20 consecutive weeks. And this really highlights the fact that whatever muscle you lost, you gained back so quickly that at the end of this 30-week time frame, it didn't matter, right? So it's not necessarily directly measuring rate of muscle loss, but it is measuring what you actually care about, which is the consequence of time off if you just get back to training afterwards. And their conclusion was, and I quote, "Our results therefore suggest that trainees should not be too concerned about occasional short-term training breaks in their daily lives when it comes to lifelong strength training." A couple of things in there. I totally agree with that verbatim. But I crack up because they're saying occasional short-term training breaks. They're calling 10 weeks off a short-term training break. Now, again, compared to like I tore my ACL and I'm out for 9 months, like 10 weeks is short. But like compared to what a lot of people are worried about, 10 weeks is a long time. You know, most people are sweating over a week or two. You know, these people didn't train for 10 weeks. And then at the end of 30 weeks, it didn't matter, right? So the other thing I love about this quote is when it says, when it comes to lifelong strength training, which I think is super powerful because we should be looking at this in the context of training for the next 10 to 50 years, right? And so when you think about that 1 week, it does not make a difference. It doesn't. So my conclusions when it comes to this discussion of how fast we lose muscle if we don't train, 1 week of bed rest, you probably lose significant muscle. But again, we regain it quickly. Somewhere between 2 and 4 weeks of no training but normal activity is when we'd start to see detectable, you know, statistically significant muscle growth. Two, it happens slowly. Like, it clearly happens slowly, right? Over 2 to 4 weeks is slow. It's not like after a week of training, your body just gets rid of all that muscle. That isn't long enough for your... Well, again, the net of muscle loss and muscle regain seems to not be a big deal. Next, don't mistake feeling flat or feeling a little weak for loss of actual muscle tissue. Those things happen quickly, right? You lose muscle glycogen and water when you stop training within a week, I'd say. Not all of it, but some of it, maybe enough to notice. If you've ever, you know, taken 3 days off the gym and you weigh less, or you've ever weighed a little bit less during a deload period, it's because you've lost water from inflammation, water from glycogen, and that is a normal adaptation, and it comes back quickly, and you want it to come back quickly. And last, if you train consistently over time, these little breaks won't really matter, you know, in the context of decades of training. Next, how we're going to move on to the next section, which is how quickly do I regain it when I go back to training? And I will say that we kind of answered that with a lot of these studies, because these are not just detraining studies. They're also like resensitization and regaining or retraining studies. So we'll reference that in a second. But everyone wants to talk about muscle memory. What I would say about muscle memory is we don't really understand it as much as we thought. You know, I think that we're going to go over two things that are in the bucket of muscle memory, but we don't understand it. It's not as simple as what I'm going to lay out here. The experts in this field would say, hey, like what I'm about to say is true, but we don't necessarily know if there's something else going on, or if, you know, how powerful these two things are. And so the two categories I would talk about when we're talking about muscle memory, the first is neurological adaptations. We used that term previously, you know, in the previous section to talk about strength and coordination. And I'll focus on that coordination thing, because if you've lifted weights before, a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you will relearn those motor patterns. You will relearn how to do those movements more quickly than somebody that's never trained. And learning those movements, relearning them, will mean that you will get back to more productive training more quickly than somebody that's never trained. So if you already know, you know, even if you haven't done an RDL in 10 years, or a split squat in 10 years, or a bench press in 10 years, you will relearn those movements quicker than somebody that's never trained. And so that those neurological adaptations, while they go away, they come back. It's easier for you to relearn movements you once knew how to do than if you've never done them before. The next is something that we call or I might even call myonuclei permanence. And so myonuclei is just basically a two-part word. The prefix myo just refers to muscle tissue, and nuclei meaning nucleus. And so the permanence of muscle cell nuclei, basically muscles are unique in that they have many nuclei in a single cell, and training can actually cause you to get more myonuclei. It seems that these myonuclei are either completely permanent or semi-permanent. What that means is even as the muscle shrinks, these nuclei within the muscle cell tend to stick around, which makes regaining muscle easier. Now, this was first learned, I don't have the date or the study name, but I do recall it's from a rat study. So this was the first time we learned it kind of about myonuclei permanence. It's from a rat study. I think it was out of Norway. I wish I had the name. I don't. But what we do have is a study from Seaborn in 2018, which basically was one of these on-off-on studies. So they trained for 7 weeks, and then they took 7 weeks off. And it showed that the changes at the DNA level stay in place during detraining. Sort of the epigenetic effects of training remain. Now, that was only 7 weeks, of course. But again, kind of putting a stake in the ground of like, okay, maybe we don't know if these nuclei last forever, but they certainly last for at least 7 weeks, right? So we're not exactly sure how long these nuclei last or exactly how powerful they are in terms of making muscle regain, happen faster. But between neurological adaptations, you're regaining coordination for movements you've done in the past, your ability to relearn them more quickly, and this idea that the nuclei within the muscle cell remain either permanent forever or semi-permanent for a long time, both make regaining muscle easier. Some people like to say, it takes you about half the time you spent off to regain that muscle. I would say that that's a fine way to think about it. Not very scientific, but it does help you wrap your head around, hey, it doesn't happen immediately within 1 week. But, if I take 2 months off, I could maybe expect to be where I was prior within 1 month. And I think that that's, again, not mega scientific. It's not like super evidence-based piece of advice, but it does give you a ballpark that I would probably sign off on that. I would say that that doesn't work if we're talking about years. If you've taken 10 years off, you can probably get to where you were, in less than 5 years. And so I actually think that if, when we're talking about years, then that does skew that piece of advice quite a bit. Again, when we look at how quickly we regain muscle, we look at a lot of the same research. All of these papers where people take time off, and it doesn't really matter, highlight that resensitization is real, that muscle memory is real, that when you take time off and you go back to training, you gain muscle more quickly than if somebody who had been continuously training, right? Like taking 6 weeks on and then 3 weeks off and then 6 weeks off highlights that while you might lose some muscle and you might detrain a little bit, that there is a resensitization such that when you go back to training, there is a more robust adaptation that happens, that you regain muscle more quickly, right? You might lose muscle, but during these short breaks, you seem to become more sensitive to training when you return to training. And so maybe it's not the case that you resensitize to the degree in which taking time off doesn't matter at all. However, ironically, in a lot of those studies, it didn't matter at all. But I probably wouldn't go as far as to say that taking, a month off doesn't make any difference. It might not make any difference over a year, but I probably wouldn't say, hey, taking time off doesn't matter at all ever in any context. But I would say is that taking these short breaks, if you do extrapolate out in terms of time, you zoom out, you talk about months, 6 months, three months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, it probably doesn't matter much, right? Whatever muscle you lose, you're going to gain back super quickly. These studies had people taking off multiple 3 week blocks. They had a group take off 10 weeks and it didn't really seem to matter, right? Which is crazy. Yeah. I would say maybe not. It doesn't, time off doesn't not matter to the degree in which it makes no difference at all. But at the very least, it isn't something to worry about since you will gain quicker when you return to training due to a resensitization to the lifting stimulus, right? And so some conclusions from a muscle memory perspective, it's hard to say exactly how quickly, but between a mechanistic rationale, anecdote, and the research on detraining, it seems that you gain muscle back really quickly. And when we talk about strength training over the lifespan, it doesn't seem like these little breaks make a whole big, that big of a difference, right? You gain it back quicker than you gained it the first time due to resensitization, and smaller breaks, the smaller the break, the less it will matter, right? And muscle memory is real, but we don't really understand it as much as we thought. Somewhere, you know, in there is a benefit of, hey, I've done this movement before, and thus relearning it will happen quicker than somebody who's never done this movement before. And so I will get back to more productive training with good technique more quickly, and something of the permanence of myonuclei matters in terms of muscle regain. Now, I added this section, this next section, which is how little can I do and still maintain, because I think it does matter. When I'm thinking of, I have a couple clients that are on vacation right now. They're in Europe, let's say 3-4 weeks. And they're worried about muscle loss. And so we have the chat. Hey, you're probably not going to lose much muscle as long as you're walking around, moving your body, and you're at calorie balance or energy balance. And whatever you do lose, it'll come back quickly on the back end, specifically if you plan on training for the next 10 to 50 years, which hopefully you are. But the follow-up question is, well, you know, what if my hotel has a gym? What, you know, how little could I do and have it still be meaningful? Or how little could I do and still maintain muscle? And I think that's a super practical follow-up question because, well, my clients are on vacation together. They like to work out. I'm thinking of a couple of them now. And, you know, they're thinking, well, what if we get one workout in a week, right? What if we get in one workout every 2 weeks? Does that matter at all? Is that just a waste of our time? And so it does factor in because sometimes it's not the case that that people have to have a complete cessation of training, that they have to take off completely. Sometimes it's all they're thinking, well, I really need to do less right now. I'm in a period of my life where I really have to do less. So how little can I do and still maintain? And every time we do research on this, the number goes down. The percentage of your current volume you have to do to maintain muscle goes down. The recommendation for how many sets per week you need to do to maintain muscle goes down. If you are interested more in this question, I would go follow Dr. Pack. He has some good research on this for strength and hypertrophy. I think it's on the Stronger by Science page. But what struck me when I wanted to talk about this, what struck me is the recent meta-analysis on volume for hypertrophy. And there was a huge study by Robinson et al., the guys at Data-Driven Strength. They have a 5-hour podcast about this meta-analysis. And their meta-analysis was not calculating maintenance volume. They were looking at the amount of volume you have to do to see meaningful hypertrophy, right? Meaningful hypertrophy. And the lowest amount of sets per muscle group per week to get meaningful, significant, detectable hypertrophy or muscle growth was about 4 sets per muscle group per week. So when I think about maintenance volume, what just saying maintenance volume, what we're saying is less than what you would need to grow, right? The amount you need to grow is more than the amount you would need to just maintain. So where can we put up some markers, some lines in the sand, right? Because we're never going to 100% know what this is. But if we can know, you know what, in the research, this much tends to grow muscle, then what we do know is less than that is probably good enough to maintain. And so about 4 sets per muscle group per week showed meaningful, you know, detectable growth of muscle. So what we know about maintenance volume is that it's going to be less than that. And if you really think about 4 sets per muscle group per week, you can probably do that in about 90 minutes per week of training. And potentially less, to be fair, right? And so that could be 3 times a week, 30 minutes. It could be 2 times a week, 45 minutes. You know, in theory, it could be 1 time per week, 90 minutes. And so just let that sink in for a sec. Let both of those things sink in. One is that the minimum effective dose for relevant, tangible hypertrophy is about 4 sets per muscle group per week, which you could easily do in 90 minutes a week or so. And so to maintain muscle is going to be less than that, right? Maybe it's, and we'll talk through a couple of studies here. And you know, I've asked and spoken on the podcast before with some people who have aggregated this research and come to a kind of expert opinion. We'll talk about what that is. And so I'm always blown away by that. 4 sets per muscle group a week is enough to grow muscle, especially if you train hard with good exercises, good nutrition, good sleep. And so maintenance is going to be notably less than that, right? What I would say, though, is that the more jacked you are, it's likely that the minimum effective dose for hypertrophy and the maintenance volume will be a little bit higher. So I don't believe that the more jacked you are, the more volume you need to do to maximize gains. But I do believe that the floor goes up. And so I do think that you can use kind of a reference of a percentage of what you're currently doing as a way of kind of packaging in your training experience. But I do think that for most people that are, I would say, in their intermediate phase, meaning it's not your first year of lifting, it's not your 20th year of lifting, you're somewhere in between, maintenance volume is going to fall somewhere between 1 to 2, 30 to 60 minute hard full body sessions per week, right? 1 to 2, 30 to 60 minute hard full body sessions per week is going to be enough for most, let's say, non-pro bodybuilders to maintain muscle. And the general consensus from, you know, some of the people that have aggregated some of this research is somewhere between 1/3 to 1/9 of what you're currently doing is sufficient to maintain muscle. So if you're training, you know, and I'm going to use minutes per week as a proxy for total training. I think that I like that better than days per week or even volume. If you're training 180 minutes per week, then we're looking at somewhere between 20 minutes a week at 1/9 and 60 minutes per week at 1/3 to maintain what you're doing. I think that that's fair. I think 1/9 has always struck me as a really, really, really crazy recommendation. And that comes from a study from Bickel and colleagues. Basically, they saw 1/9 of training volume maintained muscle for up to 32 weeks, which is like 7 or 8 months or something, which is absolutely insane. As much as I would love for it to be 1/9, I find that hard to believe, truthfully. But even if it's like 1/3 of what you're doing, you know, the gap between the amount of stimulus you need to maintain muscle and the amount you need to grow is large. It's not like, oh, if I'm doing 4 days a week to grow, I do any less than that, it's just maintenance. That's not true at all. It takes very little. It takes exponentially little to maintain muscle. Another study that we can look at is, I think it's a more recent study by M. Pampulis. They basically trained for 12 weeks. So we have 12 weeks of continuous training. And then subjects were randomized either into a group that trained once per week, once every 2 weeks, or didn't train at all. So they trained for 12 weeks, and then one group switched to training once per week for another 12 weeks, or once every 2 weeks for another 12 weeks, or no working out for 12 weeks. I love this study, by the way. One time per week maintained muscle for the next 12 weeks. So subjects, whatever they gained in that 12-week period, training just once per week for the following 12 weeks, maintained 100%, or, you know, there was no statistically significant loss in muscle. The group training once every other week. So they trained for 12 weeks, and then they, for the next, for the following 12 weeks, they trained every other week. They did 6 total workouts over 12 weeks. They maintained somewhere between 90 and 95% of their muscle. And the people that weren't training did, or weren't training at all, did see some muscle loss over the 12-week period. This was in untrained individuals. It's unclear exactly how this would change in trained individuals, but it is pretty interesting, the power of a single workout per week. The next study is one that, you know, it's not necessarily exactly what we're talking about, but it is a study I absolutely love. I love studies in elderly people training. And so this is a study I've posted about on Instagram that I absolutely love, by Bloch Eidenfeld. Basically, the subjects were an average age of 71 years old. And what they did was they trained for 1 year. There were three groups. One group trained with heavy resistance training, which was basically they trained 2 times per week in the gym with machines. They had another group that was moderate resistance training, where they trained 2 times per week. But I think one time was in the training facility. Another time was at home, mostly with bands. And they used a little bit lighter weights. And then another group did no training. But the two groups that trained did 1 year of training and then 3 years of no training. So 1 year of training, either with heavy weights in a gym or with lighter weights and bands, or no training. And then 3 years of no training. the individuals that trained 1 year heavy training with machines guided, supervised in the gym, maintained their baseline performance in leg strength, while the participants that did the moderate training and no training saw a reduction in strength and muscle mass. Essentially, 1 year of heavy resistance training was enough that 3 years of no training later, that training still maintained muscle and strength in those individuals that did the heavy resistance training. And I think they were training two, maybe three times per week. Bloch, Eidenfeld. I do want to see how much they were training because I always love that part of it, training muscle. Let's see. I might put it in the show notes, but I think they were training two or three times per week. It wasn't a ton of training, I will tell you that. And they, again, 1 year of training followed by 3 years of no training at that four-year mark, the individuals that trained heavy with weights, supervised in the gym, weights and machines, maintained leg strength and muscle. Just crazy. So when it comes to how much you can do and still maintain, in conclusion, mine and others' experience, it'll likely be something around one-third of what you're currently doing, but it's possible that it's even less. But I think if you go with that one-third number, you can be safe, in my opinion. I do think the longer you do it, potentially we might start to see, you know, it's like, okay, is that enough for you to maintain muscle forever? Or is that enough for you to maintain muscle over most practical periods where people need to utilize such an approach? I would say yes to the latter. You know, is that enough for you to maintain muscle forever? I'm not so sure, but I do think that the amount you need to maintain muscle is incredibly low. So what this means, if you train three or four times a week, you could probably maintain muscle with one hard full body session or maybe two shorter full body sessions per week. And by the way, what I would say is even if you only, let's say, you know, you're training 3 to 4 days a week, and I think that one hour full body session maintains 95% of your muscle. I mean, remember, even if you can't reach what we would call maintenance volume and you do a little less than that, it's still exponentially helpful for maintaining muscle. Like, even if one time full body per week does not maintain 100% of your muscle, over a 3 month period, it's going to do way better than not training at all. And so don't round down to zero, right? The resistance training stimulus is completely asymptotic or diminishing in returns. Like, a single workout per week is the most beneficial workout that you get. What I mean by that is, like, just because you can't work out three times, maybe you can't even work out two times, and you think one time per week isn't enough to maintain all of your muscle, it's probably enough to maintain a ridiculously high percentage of your muscle over a time period that probably extends beyond what you're actually taking off. And so do not poo-poo one time per week. One time per week, full body, can either maintain all your muscle or maintain a vast majority of it over most realistic practical time off that people need to take. So let's summarize really quick, and then I'll just probably end with some other thoughts here. In summary, you can maintain muscle on way less than you think, something like one-third, maybe even less, of what you're currently doing. I would say if you train hard with good exercises and you're at calorie or energy balance. If you don't train at all, but you continue to do day-to-day activities, muscle loss takes somewhere between 2 to 4 weeks to occur while eating at maintenance calories. But if you're on bed rest, I would expect to lose muscle more quickly. Muscle memory and resensitization are real. Whether it's the maintenance of neural adaptations, myonuclei, or something else yet we don't fully understand, you will regain muscle you once had quicker than you lost it. No, I don't like that phrasing. You will regain muscle you once had quicker than it took you to gain it the first time, we'll say. I think people like to say something like half the time you took off, but if the breaks are small, it might make no difference whatsoever. You might take a 1 week break, and then, you know, 1 week later, you feel absolutely exactly the same. And by the way, most of the research we just went over used pretty long breaks between 3 and 10 weeks, sometimes, you know, between 2 and 10 weeks, depending on the study. And it showed no difference. Now, I'm not saying there's no difference at all, but the fact that there was no difference detected means that if there is a difference, it's really small and you probably don't need to worry about it when you extend this over the lifetime of strength training. Some other thoughts I think that when I think about this study is people freak out about deloads. You know, there's like a crusade of people that are like, they don't like when coaches prescribe intentional deloads, right? I love prescribing intentional deloads. Again, not for every person all the time, but I have my reasons. If you want to learn more about them, I think it's maybe it's episode 100. You can go to my website and search deload. You'll see two episodes on that topic. But I like using intentional deloads at least as the plan at the outset, and then maybe auto-regulating and deciding on the fly if clients want to train longer or shorter. But people freak out and they're like, you're not making any gains because you're deloading every 6 weeks or something like that. It's like, what are you talking about? If someone's training hard for 5 weeks and then does a deload week and they do that for 10 years, you know, there isn't a piece of research that says that they make worse gains. And in fact, every piece of research would point to that not mattering at all. I would probably, you know, vote on that person making better gains than somebody who doesn't take breaks, right? Other thoughts, don't you dare poo-poo 1 to 2 times per week when life is busy. A lot of my clients, you know, they'll go through periods, maybe right now, I'm recording this, you know, early November, you know, we're coming up on the holidays, and, you know, just because you normally train 3 to 5 times per week doesn't mean you can't have a couple of months where you train 1 to 2 times per week, right? Where you're like, you know what, like, just because you make a change to your training doesn't mean that that's forever. Right? If you maintain for a couple of months and then go back to an amount of training that causes growth, you'll gain muscle over time. There's nothing wrong with being like, you know what, for right now, normally I train 4 times a week for an hour. Now I'm going to train, you know, twice a week for 30 minutes. Twice a week for 30 minutes, I promise you, if you are efficient and, you know, train hard, you will maintain muscle, you know? And so there's nothing wrong with turning that dial down a little bit. Don't you dare poo-poo 1 to 2 times or 1 to 2 hard full body sessions when life is busy. I would also say training harder makes up for doing less. So if you are someone who's afraid of doing less, you know, I'm not saying you need to take every set to a near-death experience here, but I do think that if you're somebody who's a little nervous about, hey, I'm training a little bit less than I normally do, well, train harder. You will make up for the loss of stimulus from doing less sets. And last but not least, if you think about the next 15 years of training, these little breaks will not make a difference if you're otherwise consistent. They just won't. The more you zoom out, the more these little breaks become invisible, right? If you just looked at your training career as like a, whatever, as like a single line, and you kind of erased all of the times that you didn't train, the more you zoom out, the more that line represents, you know, years and 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, the more you won't even be able to see those little eraser marks. If you wrap your head around the fact that you're going to be training for the next forever, hopefully forever, then these breaks don't really make a difference. Is it possible that somebody is taking so many breaks and when they are training, things aren't perfect, they don't have their intensity dialed in, they don't, you know, take sets close to failure, they're not eating enough protein, not sleeping enough, and yeah, okay, is it possible that somebody's taking so many breaks in combination with imperfect training such that it really does matter? Sure, fine. But most people are panicking about an amount of time off that will not make any difference a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month from now. It'll either make so little difference that you can't detect it, or it will make no difference at all due to resensitization. I don't think resensitization potentiates even greater gains. I think it does, depending on the time scale, combo for another day, but I'm not saying these little breaks potentiate even greater gains. I'm not even saying they fully negate the time off, but I do think that they make these short breaks just a non-issue for somebody who is otherwise consistent and training hard. You're going to be absolutely fine. And while we're here, close out again, if you can train a little bit, it goes a long, long way. All right, guys. Thank you guys for listening. Hope this episode finds you well. I hope it, hope it finds you well. Has any email that's ever started, I hope this email finds you well, actually found you well. But I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope it gives you a little bit of reprieve, a little bit of an exhale when you think about those, you know, couple of days off, a week off, 2 weeks off, a month off because you get a little injured, something happens. Like, you're going to be okay if you're otherwise consistent. Resensitization, muscle memory is real. Muscle loss is slow. If you can still get up and move your body and you're not on complete bed rest, it's going to make a big difference. If you're at energy balance, it's going to make a difference. And so, yeah, man, I just don't want people to be so worried about these little breaks. Yeah. So, what I would love is if you made it this far and you really do enjoy the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify. It really does help. And for the first 3 or 4 years of doing this podcast, I never asked for a review. It really does mean a ton. The only negative reviews I've ever had are people who don't like the occasional F-bomb. And so if you don't like the F-bombs, I'm sorry. Please don't tell me in the reviews. But otherwise, anyway, I appreciate you guys, and I will see you guys in the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram, @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.